As you may already know, Florida's a favorite place to go. There's many things to see and do, but nice to escape the snow.
Thank you for tuning into Hannah and Eric Go Birding, a podcast by birders for birders.
I'm Hannah and he's Eric.
We created this podcast to share adventures, sometimes misadventures, and opinions that we have on different birding topics. We're definitely not experts, and anything that we discuss that might be controversial, I want you to remember, they're our own opinions and they might be different from yours.
Well, the great backyard bird count's coming up soon.
It's
next
week
weekend.
Away. Yeah.
February 16th through the 19th. So that is always a fun time to get out and count the birds in your local area, whether it's your backyard or, you know, if you go on their website, there's a lot of different events that are happening around the country. So you might check one of those out, or, you know, if you just want to participate to the basic minimum that you can, all you have to do is get out and bird for a few minutes and help census what birds are around those days.
Yeah, I feel like it kind of gives me an excuse to be lazy in my birding, that I can just look out of the window or just stand on the back deck. It's not that I need an excuse to stand on the back deck for 15 minutes, but I really like having that excuse. Well, it's a great backyard bird count. I'm very busy today. I've got things to take care of. I'm counting these birds. I'm counting these juncos. I'm counting these finches.
Well, and very busy. Whenever I'm looking out the back window, I don't always like eBird, because I'm just kind of enjoying.
I know. I've been really bad this last like 2 months. Like I every morning I spend at least 5, maybe 10 minutes staring out of the back window, looking at everything at the feeder. But I think I've only eBirded twice, and I'm feeling guilty about it.
I know, but you
know, I'm going to cut that. I'm not going to let people know that I'm not eBirding.
Wow. Okay. Anyway, so we'll put some information in the show notes if you want to check out what sorts of things are happening or how to participate in the Great Backyard Bird Count. You can check it out there.
Awesome. So somebody bought us some coffees.
A couple people
and did. Alex bought us some coffees.
There you go. Yeah, so thank you, someone, and Alex, for buying us some coffees. We really appreciate it, helping to support our show. And we love bringing you all our podcast. And of course, we don't do it for the money. We do it because we want to share birds with other people. But we appreciate, because there are a lot of costs that go into podcasting, we appreciate those folks who have bought us some coffees. And we just appreciate anybody who listens to us.
Absolutely.
And on that note, we've also had a couple folks reach out to us about questions, just emails about, you know, where's good places to bird, or, you know, they're talking about going to the Rio Grande Valley Birding Festival and what are some suggestions we have. We're always happy to answer questions like that. So
yeah, if absolutely, 100%.
You have birding related questions, we'll do the best to our ability to answer those. So you can always email us or Facebook or Instagram, whatever. You know, we're just happy that people are excited about birds.
I feel like at the very least we can point people in a direction for further research.
Yeah.
At the very least. So.
Or we, you know, can we know who the contact is? Who would know that actual
Who would know
information?
The information? Exactly. Yeah.
We're just the go-betweens.
You guys are all listening to Hannah and Eric Go Birding. Hannah has two other podcasts, Women Birders Happy Hour and Bird Nerd Book Club. Last week, Hannah had Bird Nerd Book Club come out. What was your episode? Who was in that?
So I had Susan Myers, who put out a book in 2022 called The Bird Name Book, which is a fantastic resource. It's not so much like a novel or, you know, a work of reading that you sit down and read in one go. That's more of an encyclopedic book about some of these names, like Gonalec is one that she talks about.
Yeah.
And we've seen a couple Gonalecs and, you know, where that name comes from. So it's really fascinating reading, and it was fun to chat with her about the history of some of these bird names and, you know, the first instance in which they came in written language.
Huh. Yeah. And then next week is Women Birders Happy Hour. And who did you interview for that one?
So I'll have Katrina Clark on that one, and that one comes out on February 18th.
Awesome.
Haven't chatted with her yet. I'm going to do that tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to hearing about her and all the cool things that she's done. So, Eric, we have some places that we're going coming up.
Yeah.
You want to tell everyone about them?
Sure. Well, hopefully it's not raining, because right now it's everywhere in California is wet.
Fingers crossed.
It looks like it might be all right. But San Diego Bird Festival in 2 weeks at the end of February. We will be down there doing birding by bike, giving a couple presentations, and just kind of hanging out and doing all the fun things the San Diego Bird Festival has for us.
Well, we love San Diego.
We love San Diego. Yeah. Spring Chirp at the end of April, April 17th to the 20th. We are doing a repositioning cruise. I think we talked about this in our last episode. Mm-hmm. A repositioning cruise from LA to Vancouver, Canada. on May 7th to 11th. So there are Oregon Pelagic Tours, and I think Wings and a couple other trips are doing guided trips on this Pelagic. We're just going with a couple of friends, and if you're interested in going, there's still rooms left on there. I'm sure there's space left on the guided tours that are going, but it's gonna be a blast.
And just as a notice on that one, we're not guiding, so if
we're just hanging out and looking at pelagic birds.
Yeah, so if you want to go and everything, like, of course you're totally welcome, because it's a cruise ship with what, 2,000 guests or whatever,
something like that. Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll be around because we got an inside room, so we're not gonna spend a whole lot of time hanging out in our room.
Yeah,
mostly the bars and then like deck 7 where you can see the birds.
Yeah.
So yeah, it should be a fun time seeing a lot of pelagic species.
Absolutely. And then the last thing that we have planned is in September, Hannah is going to Brazil for the Amazon Birding Expedition Brazil for Women, September of 2024. It's 2024 now.
Yes, very excited about that. It's coming up. And I'm looking forward to seeing some amazing Brazilian birds and then checking out all the cool things that Brazil has to offer and women birders and all that stuff.
That's going to be a blast. So, February Bird Nerd Giveaway. We are first episode of February, so it's time to give away something, or time to announce how we're giving away something.
Yeah, so our deadline is February 20th, and what we're giving away is 2 pounds of chestnut-sided warbler medium dark roast from Birds and Beans Coffee. Sorry.
I thought you were going to stop at chestnut-sided warbler. We're giving away 2 pounds of chestnut-sided warbler.
Yeah, I know. I had a weird...
There was a little pause in there. It was concerning. It was a concerning pause.
Okay, sorry. So anyways, we get this coffee from Birds and Beans. We, you know, buy it ourselves. Like, this is our own coffee
It's delicious coffee. I'm literally drinking it right now as we're recording.
Yeah. We really like their mission. You know, we had an episode with them last year, I believe, with Birds and Beans about the benefits of coffee plantations with birds and shade grown coffee and all that stuff. And
bird friendly coffee.
Exactly. And what these farms are doing to help protect our birds. Any bag of coffee beans you buy with them goes to help support this mission.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually just had too much of it. We ordered too much.
Yeah. So, we traveled out of town and now we've kind of got a backlog.
And that's the beauty of their site, is that they have a subscription service. And so we just order, you know, we have like a monthly recurring order of coffee, but we have too much coffee, take it off my hands. it's gotta go. It's fresh, wonderful coffee,
delicious.
And you can be the randomly chosen winner of this 2 pounds of chestnut-sided warbler dark roast,
medium dark roast
from Birds and Beans. If they do this,
all you have to do is tell us a weird question that you like to ask. So we talked about this a little bit in our last episode. We thought it would be a great question for a Bird Nerd giveaway, is we travel and we ask people weird questions.
Yeah.
We ask them, how does, like, as we're birding for falcons, or we're looking at random passerines, we ask them, well, how does the peanut processing process work? And how old is that machinery there? Like, is that like something that they've been using like recently? Or
and like, I like
weird
to ask
questions.
I like to ask, like, why did you travel here? What sparked your interest in traveling to this location?
Yeah. How did they decide to use that style of bridge versus this other style of bridge?
Is this the kind of food that you normally eat?
Yeah. So what weird question or questions do you like to ask that may or may not be bird related when you're traveling or when you're around places?
Yeah. So that's our question for February.
Yes.
I can't wait to hear what you all have for us.
Maybe it'll give us some ideas for some other weird questions we can ask while we're traveling.
This is going to spark a whole new thing.
Awesome. So February 20th, get us your questions that you like to ask while you're traveling and while you're meeting new people. And you can be entered to win this coffee.
So I know we just finished up talking to you all about our trip to West Africa, and I know a lot of people think, like, wow, they travel a lot. Well, we're here to tell you about some more travel that we did. But this time it was a trip with our family that started out as a company retreat for...
Those air quotes were not visible on the camera that we don't have. But,
yeah, I just...
But they were there.
I thought the inflection in my voice kind of gave it away.
It probably did.
Those were my
That was probably an unnecessary comment from me, but
That was my air quote voice.
Your air quote. voice. Yeah. Yeah. So a company retreat for the hotel, the family's hotel.
Yeah. That we own and operate. And, you know, it's usually a slow week here. And so we all decided to go on a family trip. Mm-hmm. And that turned into another, see if you can guess my air quote voice in this. That turned into another wedding trip for my sister and her new husband. So, mm-hmm. We got permission to go a couple days early so we could go birding. And, you know, before we got into the whole, like, wedding situation. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're here to tell you all about today.
Yeah, so this trip actually also coincided with our 11th wedding anniversary. So we got down there the day... We got on our wedding anniversary.
Yeah,
January 5th. We got there on our wedding anniversary.
National Bird Day.
National Bird Day. And we raced down to Homestead to get checked into our hotel.
Yeah, so we flew into Fort Lauderdale, which is a all-day flight if you're coming from the West Coast.
It was a direct flight, but it was all day.
I know.
And it just happened to be on one of the 737-900s that is grounded because their doors fall off.
From Alaska Airlines.
From Alaska Airlines,
like
yeah.
The day after the whole door thing happened.
Yeah, we flew on one of those ones that got grounded, yeah. Interesting. Very exciting.
Yeah, which was fun getting home,
yeah,
as you can imagine. Anyways, got into Fort Lauderdale, like Eric said, raced down to Homestead, Florida, because we had scheduled a trip with the Tropical Audubon Society the next day. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we didn't
schedule it.
They were offering a trip that day.
And we registered.
And we registered for it. I thought it sounded a little more sophisticated.
It did sound more sophisticated.
I that arranged way. This. I use my...
used your contacts.
I use my connections.
Yeah, I see.
To arrange this. But we got down, got checked in our hotel, and of course we had to go search for a brewery, you know, to celebrate our anniversary, mm-hmm. which fortunately our hotel was right next to a brewery that was a little terrifying from the name, Prison Pals Brewery, but ended up being a really cool spot.
Oh, yeah.
And had a fantastic pizza pop-up right outside because, of course, in Florida... In Oregon, you have to have, where we live in Oregon, you have to have food served at any brewery that you go to.
Yeah, and anytime there's serving alcohol in Oregon, you have to serve food. It's part of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission's rules, the OLCC. So it was very weird that a lot of other states don't have that rule.
Yeah.
So like Texas doesn't have that rule, Florida doesn't have that rule. So when we go to breweries there, they have a pop-up food outside because they're like, oh, well, we'll have pop-up food just because, but well, all breweries here in Oregon all serve food also.
But it's also kind of fun too, because they change each time. So it's like,
yeah,
you can go to the same brewery over and over again and get different food
every time, like different days of the week, different food. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, it was really good pizza. I got to tell you, we had one that was like, what was it? Feta and hot honey or something
hot
like that.
Hot honey. And yeah, it was like a spicy honey with feta. Yeah.
It was so
good. And there was another one that was slightly spicy. We had too. It was all like spicy pepperoni or something.
I don't know, but we had a lot of food.
Yeah, it was more than we need. We also had buffalo wings, and the buffalo wings were really good too.
Yeah, and the beer was really good as well. So yeah. Happy anniversary all around.
All around. Josh's pizza was delicious. Prison Pals Brewery was good beer. So
not as scary as I would have thought.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely recommend. 5 out of 5 recommend.
Yeah. And so then we went back to the hotel and headed to bed because we had to get up really early for the walk. I think it started at 7:30.
Yeah, quote unquote, really early. You didn't use your air quotes voice.
It's because we open our office at 9. So
I
imagine anything before that's pretty early. Anyways, it was at Frog Pond Wildlife Management Area, which is also called Lucky Hammock. And
we've been there before. We went, we chased after an Ani that was down there a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Smooth billed Ani.
When we lived there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was while we were still living there. Yeah. So it's a really interesting, just outside of the Everglades entrance, the flamingo entrance, right?
I think so.
I think that's what that entrance is called.
It's
yeah.
Like the main entrance.
It's the main entrance. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just outside of that, really, really cool site. That's a wildlife management area. That's not, doesn't have any, there's no bathrooms. There's no interpretive panels really. There's like kind of a partial interpretive panel at the beginning that's fallen apart.
Yeah.
But it's a really good birding site.
It's on the Great Florida Birding and Wildlife Trail.
It is. They even have signs that have only been shot a little bit.
Well, and one thing I was really excited about going there, because you and I have been there in mm-hmm. the past by ourselves, and this is kind of the situation where it's like, we've been there and we've birded it, but I don't really know that we were birding it right.
Did we do it the right way?
Exactly. And so
did we see everything we could have seen?
That was one of the reasons why, like, I saw that walk and I was like, oh, heck, we got to go on this one.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
It's like, have we been screwing this up the entire time that we've been coming to this place? Which, I mean, we found birds before when we go the group, the Smooth Bill Donnie. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, a lifer. We got that one. So we were semi-successful birding it.
Yeah.
But anyways,
it turns out we were basically birding it correctly. So we're fine.
Except they have the hammock that's like to the, what is that? The west side of the road that you walk down. And like, I think people walk around that hammock, but the grass is so tall. Like You don't think so?
I don't think they walk around.
Because people were talking about like seeing a snake in there.
Yeah. I don't think people walk around that. Maybe they do. I wouldn't want to walk around that.
Well, see, that's the thing about wildlife management areas, though. People just kind of wander everywhere in those.
Yeah. I don't like that.
But you like bushwhacking. We've talked about this.
Yeah. Maybe in places that don't have ticks snakes and chiggers and alligators and the extra things that's hiding in the chest-high grass that you don't really want to encounter on your own.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I get that. So, anyways, when you get to Lucky Hammock, when we got there, there was already, like, a dozen or two dozen people. Oh, yeah.
It was popular.
And this was on January 6th. So it was kind of like their first walk since the new year. Yeah. And so I think a lot of people were like getting after their new year's goals going on a bird walk. But anyways, when you get to the site, we overflowed the parking lot. So we were all parking on the side of that main highway that goes into the national park.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the entrance and there's a gate and then it's just a road that just kind of a straight road that goes off into nowhere.
Yeah.
And that's what the site looks like. And that's why I'm always not really sure that we're birding it right, because it's just like the straight stretch of road.
It's just a straight stretch of road that has a gate on either end of it. Mm-hmm. And you just walk down it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was really, really good birding. Like when we first got there, like a dozen or two dozen people were there. By the time we got rolling and started walking and birding, we were up to
45 probably people.
45, yeah. So many people.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Yeah. And there was a couple rare birds that were just kind of hanging around at that area. So yeah, Vermilion flycatcher was there.
And it was right on the road, on the main road.
Yeah. Super easy to get, hanging out, feeding, and hanging out on top of all the wires and the trees right there at the entrance. So everyone got lots of really good looks and really good photos of this vermilion that's hanging around, which is just a gorgeous bird.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen a vermilion flycatcher, like, vermilion color, like bright red and then black wings and just like this, it's like a stunning bird. Stunning.
It looks like a little flame dancing around.
Yeah.
As we were walking down the road a little bit further, like Eric mentioned, it was a pretty large group. So we were spread out. People mm-hmm. were chatting, which, you know, is fine. We don't really mind that at all. There were mockingbirds. There was just an absolute ton of catbirds.
Yes. So like many catbirds.
All over the place.
Just meow, meow. All around us.
Yeah. There were a couple loggerhead shrikes mm-hmm. that were just on the telephone line that goes along the road, or the power line that goes along the road. So I always love seeing loggerhead shrikes. They're just one of my favorite birds. They're so charismatic and adorable, but then they're like vicious little hunters. But then
vicious.
They have such a cute noise too that they make.
So we're walking along, and things kind of, we had a big spike in bird activity. We probably got 30 or so species right off the bat as we're walking along. And then things kind of quieted down a little bit. So I started talking with the field trip coordinator for Tropical Audubon. Uh-huh. And I was really curious, like back to our weird questions we ask people. I was like, so how is this the regular level of interest? Is this high? And he was like, well, this is about average. And they run multiple trips a week all through their season. And they've had up to 100 people on some of their trips. Ooh, so Tropical Audubon is very popular with their field trips, apparently.
I think they said they had about 2,000 or so members.
Yeah, that's a lot of active engagement in an Audubon society. So that's super cool that they have that much interest for that area, which it makes sense. It's
a popular area.
South Florida.
Yeah.
South Florida, you got all sorts of cool birds. So that was fascinating talking to him about like the logistics of the different trips that they do and how many people and how often and all that stuff. So if you're in the South Florida area, like check the Tropical Audubon, because likely there's probably a trip somewhere within their coverage area while you're there. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really good information.
Yeah. So normally when Eric and I had birded this area, I don't know why. I just, like, get bored of birding when we get to, like, the actual hammock part. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we just thought that that's as far as we needed to go.
That's, yeah, I think that's what we thought. That's as far as you need to go, but.
So anyways, this walk, it was scheduled for about 4 hours. Like, it was a pretty long walk.
Yeah.
And we got down all the way to the end of the gate, so about twice as far as we normally walk.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that in about 2 hours or so. So it's a pretty slow pace that you take because there's so much that's moving along. And also because, you know, it's, like I said, it's a larger group. So you have to stop periodically to, like, get everybody on the birds and everything. But then once we got past the gate, there's a waterway.
Mm-hmm.
And we had never been down there before, down to that canal.
Yeah.
And that was pretty good for, like, egrets and things.
Yeah, there's a handful of ducks, some scop. Stuff
yeah,
like that.
I imagine kingfishers. We didn't see any at the time.
Not that day.
I can definitely see a kingfisher being in there. But
oh, yeah.
There's a berm that goes off the main road that we walked down. And that's where we got, like, the scops and things.
Yeah, it goes towards, it's towards the east of the of that main road that comes in. So it was a little bit of a fork that we took. We ended up going a little over 2 miles total. So yeah. I'm thinking it was probably about a mile down the road, and then we cut back and then came up the spur about a half mile and then came back. So yeah, it was really interesting. The target for the trip was 50 species. That was the hope. We only ended up getting 48, which included a whole bunch of short-tailed hawks.
There was so many,
but
there was
they
like 8 of them.
Yeah, they didn't pop up until close to the end of the walk. Obviously, as things are getting warmer and stuff like that. But
yeah, so about like 9:30.
Yeah, probably 9:30 or so is when the short-tailed hawks. But there were so many of them, both light and dark morphs flying around all over the place. So that was super cool. But the target, I think the guide ended up getting 51 species.
Okay.
For his list when he finished.
Yeah,
but,
and that included a couple birds. That
a couple
he had
birds
seen
that,
before he got
exactly
there.
Before the full group had arrived. So we got 48 species, which I thought was a good start to our Florida list for the year.
Yeah, and we had a couple soras calling, so mm-hmm. that was really fun to hear those. And a lot of people, you know, were like, "Oh, I hear those in my backyard. I never knew what those were."
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it was a really fun hike, and we got to see a lot of things. There was a rainstorm in the middle of it so it was pretty warm and
it
like
mildly warm for a January in
okay but
Florida.
We're Oregonians coming from like 40 degree weather.
Oh yeah, very warm
and
for
get
us.
It, yeah. So I like did not want to bring a jacket. And then we had that rainstorm and it was like, oh shoot, should I have brought a jacket? And all of us were we're all exposed because there's no cover.
Yeah, it's just a road with no cover. So it's like, okay, well, just stand still and cover your camera as best as possible.
Yep. So just keep that in mind if you go there. And then as we were driving out, so our next stop was going to be Robert Is Here Fruit Stand because mm-hmm. you kind of have to go there when you're in the area. But as we were like driving out, I mean, we didn't even get like a quarter of a mile down the road and there was a car sitting on the side of the road.
And I was like, what the heck are these people doing?
Well, and a couple birders.
Yeah. They're just like standing on the side of the road. Like, okay, well, we were with a big group that was all kind of parked on the side of the road and everything. But then there's these random two cars parked on the side of the road up a little bit. So it's like, what are these people looking at? What are they doing?
Yeah. So Eric like kind of started to pull off the road because he wanted to see what they were looking at. And I looked back and it was Freya and her parents. And Freya, you might know, she worked for Birdability and we did an interview with her a couple years ago for that. But she's recently opened up her own company that's called Access Birding
mm-hmm.
to try to, you know, create more accessibility for birders in different locations and advise parks and things about how to be more accessible.
Exactly. Yeah,
but it was just so odd because she lives in Alabama and she, you know, we see her in random places around the country.
And this was like, we had no idea she was in Florida.
No.
She was there with her parents, birding with her parents. Her parents, she's from Australia. Her parents are from Australia. So this whole weird world of people meeting in South Florida.
Yeah. So it just goes to show you that the birding world can just be really small. It's so odd.
Yeah. And keep track when you see people parked on the side of the road, because maybe you know them.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we got out and chatted with her for a few minutes. And we were mentioning, like, yeah, we're going to this place around the corner. It's called Robert Is Here. And she's like, oh, of course. We already stopped there this morning.
Yeah, she told us her story about when she first went to Florida ever, and it was went to Robert's Here and all that. So it's like, okay, good. So Robert Is Here is a staple,
it's
even
legit.
even for people that are just visiting, like like Freya was, and like we are this time.
Well, and we stopped there a handful of times, and that's why we have to go back every time.
Yeah, we love Robert's here.
Yeah, so anyways, we stopped at Robert is Here, which is this incredible fruit stand. I know some of you all like our food recommendations, and some people are really annoyed by it, so yeah. I'll try to be brief.
But a milkshake. Get a milkshake.
It's a milkshake location. It's also, like, they have all these crazy fruits that I've never seen anywhere else before. Mm-hmm. They have these ginormous avocados.
They're the size of, like a volleyball.
They're not that big.
I'm just kidding. No, it's like a softball.
It's like an ostrich egg.
Yeah, they're large. It's like 6-inch diameter, sort of like thing. It's just like big.
And it's also really cool because it's the southernmost Purple Martin roosting or nesting area or something
in the continental U.S. Yeah, there's a lot of qualifiers on their nest, but right now, when we were there, it was populated mostly by house sparrows.
Yeah.
But
they've actually, it seems that they've expanded a lot since we've been there. Now they have, like, sandwiches and
They keep growing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems like urban sprawl is essentially coming out towards that. So it doesn't seem like it's as far out in the middle of nowhere as it did
when we first went. Yeah, the first time we went, it was, like, out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Farm fields. And now there's, like houses across the street.
I know. It's kind of odd. But they seem to be growing and expanding, so maybe that development is good for them.
Well, anyways, key lime pie milkshake is, like, the best thing I've ever had. Is there?
I don't think I've ever had any bad milkshakes there. I feel like I mix it up every time.
That's the only one I ever get, because it's kind of one of those situations that, like, if I never go here ever again, I want to make sure that I get the thing that I like.
That's true. Yeah. That's the saying. So anytime we go somewhere, it's like, well, this might be the last time I ever go here. So you have to get the thing you know you like.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyways, we got our milkshakes. We got a giant avocado. We got some chips so we could eat the avocado later.
Well, we had to get 2 avocados because my family was coming the next day. And I wanted to make sure that we had an avocado for them to see. Because I've been talking about this avocado for years. And who doesn't like an avocado?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
So while we're doing all of that, Hannah was searching through eBird to find what rare birds are being seen that we could try to chase around for our half of a day that we had left before her parents arrived.
Yeah.
And she found a couple really interesting ones that were much more difficult to find than we expected.
Oh, they were like in people's backyards and people we don't know. So we didn't want to go barging.
We're not
going to
go knock on random people's doors. But
we
drove to a couple of the spots to no avail. But then we saw at Olita State Park that there was a yellow-headed caracara that had been seen like 2 weeks prior.
Okay, so let's talk about
There's a whole story behind this. This is really fascinating.
Yeah, let's talk about this yellow-headed caracara. So you might have seen it on Facebook if you are on some of the like ABA pages and stuff like that. But this gal was in therapy, and I can't remember where she was at. It was like at a college, like one of the colleges right in there. And she was like talking to her therapist, and all of a sudden this yellow-headed caracara lands on the like the windowsill outside.
Yeah. Well, close enough for her to see without needing binoculars or anything.
And I mean, what are the chances that someone is going to be in like an appointment like this and they're going to see a rare bird pop up and know what that rare bird is?
And they're enough of a birder to know that this is a rare bird they're seeing and to notify the officials appropriately.
Yeah, so anyways, that's the initial sighting of this yellow-headed caracara. And since then, it's been seen a couple different places in like the Miami-Fort Lauderdale-ish area. Mm-hmm. But finally has been much more regular at Olita River State Park, which is a fantastic state park that's right along the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And it has like a bay inlet that there's a lot of people to hang out at. So we went over there to go find that.
It's a big picnicking park where people go and they have picnics and they like lots of families go there. It's very, very popular for that. And that's part of the reason I think that the caracara was hanging around and still seems to be hanging around. It looks like the most recent sighting was January 29th. But still relatively hanging out pretty regularly in the afternoons. It would pop in as all the picnickers leave. They would have like chicken bones and all sorts of stuff left on tables and in the trash cans or near them. And it's a scavenger. Caracaras are scavengers, scavenger falcons. So it would come in with the vultures and hang out with the vultures as it kind of goes around scrounging what they can find out of what's there. So it makes sense that it would kind of hang around this sort of place. But really interesting park, huge, very high usage.
Well, and we were there.
Huge, quote unquote huge. It's a lot of picnic tables.
We were there on a Saturday, mm-hmm. so there were a lot of people having a lot of parties.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we were both park rangers for a while, and I love going into a park and seeing a ton of people use it. I mean,
absolutely.
There's a lot of variation.
People enjoying nature outside.
Yeah, there's a lot of variation in which people can use parks, of course. Like, we're birders, so we like to go, you know, just walk around quietly and mm-hmm. everything and do our birder thing. But then to see, like, families go into parks and have picnics like this.
That's fantastic.
It's also just so enjoyable, too, because it's like they're getting outside and getting into nature. And, you know, they could have had a picnic in somebody's backyard or whatever the case is. But mm-hmm. they decided to go to the park and have a good time. So
yeah, and they go and play in the water a little bit and sit on the picnic benches and enjoy outside,
yeah,
which is awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I know I worked at some parks that there were nobody that would come.
Yeah.
And it's like, why am I here? but also, I was an interpretive ranger. My goal and my job was to talk to people.
Yeah. So. And when there's nobody to talk to, it's, well, what am I doing?
I know. I'm just talk to myself. so we got there at about 1:30 in the afternoon, and the Caracara was really being seen later in the day, like around sunset, like 5 or 6 or something like that.
But we thought we might as well give it a shot. This is the one time that we have. We're not going to be able to stick around until sunset because Hannah's parents were flying in that evening pretty much at sunset, so it was like, well, we'll get what birding we can at this park.
Yeah. So, you know, we had 13 species. We were there for a little under 2 hours, but magnificent frigate bird is always a favorite to mm-hmm. see that. A couple of lesser blackback gulls, lots of different gull species, fish crows, blue-gray gnatcatchers, yeah. things that we don't get to see very often. So it's fun to just become reacquainted with those species as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So we walked around a bit, we birded, and then right as we were about to call it quits, we walked back to the pier, which is where it's generally being seen at, this pier area that's at the southwest edge of the park, and Mariah and Luis, which are other co-ambassadors with us. They do the Hawk Watch down in South Florida. Fantastic Hawk Watch. If you're ever down there, you should go check it out with them. They're a team to be rivaled. Mariah and Luis, but they're with Team Co. And so we got to stand and talk with them. We see them like once a year, maybe.
Well, and they live down in that
and they
area.
Live there. So it wasn't that weird to see them because they live there, but it was also like, we're having a day of seeing people we know. Like, we flew literally all the way across the country. And we're just seeing people we know. Okay, well, whatever. And we didn't tell anybody that we're coming down there. It was just kind of like, suddenly we're in Florida and seeing people. Some of them lived in Florida, some of them didn't. And it was really interesting.
See, this is the thing about birding that's so ridiculous. Like, when we were in Gambia, we ran into a couple other guides when we were hanging mm-hmm. out with our guide, and we'd see him at the lodge or whatever. And then I realized, like, I'm Facebook friends with this person. I've been Facebook friends with them for like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And they asked me a year ago, hey, you want to come to the Gambia and I'll guide you around? And I totally forgot about all that.
Completely forgot, yeah.
I know, or else I would have hired them. Not that Abrima wasn't great or anything, but it's like, it's just so ridiculous. Yeah. And I hope you all appreciate a good coincidence as much as I do.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, it's just something that keeps me going. Those weird little coincidences. Anyways, we didn't have any luck on the falcon, which is disappointing, but there were a lot of birders who were there and just super
and
friendly.
As we were leaving, people were like, oh, are you leaving already? And it's like, I don't even know you, but yeah.
And they brought like camp chairs too.
Yeah, there were some people that bring camp chairs. They were like, oh, I'm camping out. I'm going to plop down next to the pier out there and just wait for it to show up.
I know. I kind of wish we could have hung out.
But it was getting close enough time. We were kind of hungry. It's getting time to go pick up your parents from the airport. So we stood at the back of the rental car and used one of our keys to cut open the avocado and just scooped out the avocado with chips, bag of chips. It was basically like guacamole, just like, you know, but not really guacamole.
It was so good.
It was good. Delicious avocado eaten with a raw avocado eaten with a bag of chips standing at the tailgate of the car.
Using a key to try to peel it.
But it was good. It was really, really, really good.
If you've never done that, you've never been to South Florida. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But it was really good. We had just enough time for Hannah to go dip her toe in the ocean, which meant getting hammered hard at Dania Beach.
Yeah, at first,
by the waves.
I wanted to go swimming when we were in Florida before we left. And so I found this this park that's just north of Fort Lauderdale. It's called, like, Lauderdale by the Sea. It's not a park. It's a city. And they have, like, coral reefs and, like, a submerged, like, vessel that you can go scuba around and everything. And I was like, hey, we should go there. Didn't end up having time. Went to this beach. The ocean just beat the crap out of me.
Oh, my gosh. It was intense. I took a couple videos, and they don't do them any justice. Like, these... The slope of the sand was pretty steep, so the waves were just pounding, like, right there at the beach. And so Hannah's, like, trying to roll around, and she'd stand up and then plow down.
It didn't look so bad when we were standing, like, above.
When we were standing, like, 30 feet away, it didn't look that bad. But then you get down to it, and it's like, ooh, golly.
I know, it's like, those waves are bigger than me.
Yeah. Yeah, so you got to get pounded by the waves for a little bit.
Yeah, and we're so stupid. Was, like, the lifeguard was literally leaving when we walked up. Fortunately, you are semi-lifeguard trained.
Yeah, so we...
And I'm a really good swimmer.
You're a very good swimmer, yeah. So we did that for a little bit. I watched as a couple turns and pelicans flew by. And...
Well, and then we got to our hotel that we were staying at that night, and there were parrots all over the
hotel. Oh, yeah, all over the awning above it, yeah.
Yeah, at first we thought they were caged. Yeah. Because they were so loud, and they were all in one area, and then we looked up, and we were like, oh, no.
Oh, wait, no, they're
wild,
they're
parrots.
Parrots. Red-crowned parrots, and some other parrots.
Yeah.
I didn't think to have my binoculars, like, accessible when we were walking into the hotel, so I missed that one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we got changed, and then headed to the airport, because it was time for the airplane to arrive.
Which ended up being very late because of tornado.
Yeah, there was a tornado touchdown in between. Like, we got to the airport, and right as we were pulling into the airport, we get all these alerts on our phone that take cover, blah, blah, blah. There's a tornado, and it turns out the tornado touched down in between the airport and the hotel. So somewhere within that region. So we drove right past where the tornado touched down. So that delayed all the flights. It grounded flights that were still on the ground, and it didn't allow the ones that were circling to land. So we ended up what we thought was going to be like 20 minutes sitting at the airport. We sat in the cell phone lot for, what, like 2 hours?
Yeah.
2.5 hours?
Yeah.
As we were just, like, sitting there. Like, I could have watched, like, a whole movie on my phone. But I don't know why I didn't think to watch a movie on my phone while we were sitting
because
there.
Because the service was terrible.
Oh, the service is awful. Because the cell phone lot is underneath some bridges. So it was, like, really awful. So I was like, well,
I'll just
sit here and listen to the radio for 2.5 hours.
It's a cell phone lot. That's the whole point of it.
I know. It's so weird.
But
anyways, yeah. we got over, fought the traffic, picked him up.
So we picked everybody up, got him in the car, got him to the hotel. And
you would be amazed at how much luggage people need when they're getting married on a cruise. And us included. We needed fancy clothes and beach clothes.
I brought like 5 pairs of shoes when I normally bring like 2.
Yeah. So it was very different packing when you're packing to be a part of a wedding on a cruise.
We didn't bring our scope that time, so my shoes just filled where my scope normally would go.
That's true, yeah.
So we got everybody at the hotel, checked in, and then I had scoped out a place that I wanted to go for dinner that night.
Because you love secret bars.
I do love secret bars.
Every time we go somewhere, Hannah searches secret bars near me, and it's... Sometimes they're actually secret, where you have to have a code, and you have to go in, and it's a whole, like, situation. It's kind of exciting. Sometimes it's fake secret, and you're kind of secret,
but they're always
interesting. They're always fascinating, and they usually have special weird drinks.
So, anyways, I found one that's called Bodega Taco. No, Bodega Taqueria in E Tequila, and you know there's a handful of secret bars in like the Miami Fort Lauderdale area, but this one seemed like the easiest to get like a big group of people into that you don't have to dress up, that kind of thing. So, and you know, we all like Mexican food, so
absolutely,
we decided to go there. When we were walking, because it's on Lasso Las Boulevard in Fort Lauderdale, when we were walking to it from where we parked, we passed by a bar that, like, the I had like garage doors that were open, and I was like, oh, cool, you know, bar right there. And so we went around the corner, and that's where the front is for the secret bar. And it's like an Airstream inside this building, like a half Airstream inside yeah. this building where you like order your food and right there at the counter. Mm-hmm. And then
you get margaritas and stuff too at that counter.
Yeah. And they have like so many different things, and you can like make your own bowl and make your own burritos, and food was really good. Yeah,
very, very good food.
But then to get into the secret bar, like just to the left of the Airstream, there's like a door of a outhouse.
Yeah, a porta potty door mounted to the wall.
And so while we were like ordering food, I was like, hey, Eric, go through there and see if you can figure out like getting a table or whatever. And he went into the first door and he's like, that's just the bathroom.
It's just a bathroom. It wasn't a bathroom. And I failed to notice that the urinals were like mounted
up in your chest.
They were mounted like chest height. I just walked in. I'm like, I don't have to go to the bathroom, but.
And there was a window behind you.
Yeah. I literally opened it up and walked in, and there was a couple urinals, and I'm like, okay, urinals, whatever. And so I turned around and I was like, well, that's just a bathroom.
Yeah.
It's just a weird door for a bathroom.
And I was like, no, that is where the speakeasy is. So I like went through the porta potty door, and right behind it, there's like a meat freezer locker.
Yeah.
And so you open that, and that opens up into the bar that we walked past.
Yeah. Which would be secret if they didn't have the big bay doors open.
Yeah.
Cause they're big blacked out bay doors that would normally be closed, but, it must've been a slow night, or maybe it was
it was nice weather.
Nice weather. So they had everything wide open, but it was like, oh, well, it's not as secret as I would have liked.
But if we had come from the other way.
Oh yeah. We would have no idea. Yeah. We wouldn't have had any idea. Yeah. But we saw it as we went by, but it was really interesting. It's all dark. The secret bar itself didn't really have a theme. It was just bar.
Yeah, pretty much.
But you had to go in normal circumstances. You would have had to have gone through that porta potty door, through the meat locker door, to get in there.
Exactly. But good food, good drinks. Yeah. You know, I was happy about that. Yeah. And we got everybody safely to Fort Lauderdale, and we were ready to jump on the cruise the next day. Mm-hmm. So you know, that's all an undertaking when you're traveling with a group as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, so the next day we got up, returned the car that we had rented for the day so we could go birding, and then headed towards the port to get on the ship.
Yeah, so stay tuned. One of these upcoming episodes, we'll be talking all about how
we birded
in the Caribbean on a cruise, on and off a cruise ship, without it being a birding cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, great qualifiers.
Lots of qualifiers to that one. But we saw birds.
We did.
And I look forward to talking about it.
Okay. Hey, so thank you all for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and maybe you learned something. You can rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Music, and anywhere else you listen to us. If you'd like to connect with us on the socials, you can follow us at Hannah Goes Birding and Eric Goes Birding on Instagram. Our Facebook is Hannah and Eric Go Birding. Our email is hannahandericgobirding@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @WeGoBirding. My Blue Sky is @HannahGoesBirding. And you can connect with us on our website at www.gobirdingpodcast.com. You can tell us what you think and share the love of birding with your friends.